Hi everyone and good evening. My name is Allie McGregor and I'm here on behalf of BioNews, which is MS News Today's parent company, and I'm here tonight for a very special reason. If you joined us on our IG Live on Tuesday, you already know what's going on, but I'm here tonight to have a conversation with two of the folks behind the scenes at MS News Today, two of our social media coordinators. You probably already know them well, and if you don't, then you definitely want to stick around and get to know them better. So I'm excited tonight to be joined by Ed and Aurelius, and they will be joining me very shortly. So just bear with me one second while I bring them on live. And again, thank you so much for being here tonight. Hi, Ed.
Here I am. Hi, Allie.
How are you?
I'm well, and there's our second panelist.
Hi.
Hi, Aurelius. How are you?
Good. How are you? Sorry, it's kind of like hard to get this connection, and this lighting is a little bit off.
No, you look great. You sound great. And the three of us are twinning or tripling, tripleting with our headphones. Yes.
Perfect.
Yes. So, Ed, where are you joining us from tonight?
I am in the Maryland suburbs of Washington, D.C., where it was a sunny 75 degrees today. I guess that's about 22 Celsius.
Thank you for translating that for me as a Canadian. I appreciate that. And Aurelius, what about you? Where are you tonight?
I'm actually in Danbury, Connecticut right now.
Awesome. Thank you both for making the time to be here tonight. We have a number of people watching. They're excited to meet you, to get to know you better. So let's start with a brief introduction. Aurelius, do you want to tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do for fun, and how you found this role at MS News Today?
Yeah, of course. So my name is Aurelius. I'm 29, from Stamford, Connecticut. And on my free time, I try to get really involved with like my creative side and, spend time out in nature, and just kind of, you know, dive into like new interests and kind of keep my mind busy. And I have been, you know, on the search for a remote job, and, you know, I've been in fashion. I graduated from a fashion school. So I have been on the hunt for, you know, something remote, trying to keep up with, you know, all the changes now. And I had come across this position at BioNews, which I thought was perfect. And, you know, it was just a way to connect with people and dealing with social media, which I have background experience in. I thought this was great. I've always wanted to help people deal with something that I also deal with. So I just thought it was a great way to be able to connect with them and, you know, help in any way that I can.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And Ed, I know you've been with MS News Today for quite a while. So can you tell folks a little bit about your story?
Yeah. Aurelius is 29, huh?
Yes.
I'm 73. I have been living with MS for 40 plus years. So probably before both of you were born was when I was diagnosed back in 1980. Back then, there were no disease-modifying therapies at all. And in terms of diagnosis, there were no MRIs available. So it was a totally different world. And I don't want to say you're lucky to have MS, but you're lucky to have MS in 2021 rather than in 1980, because there are so many more opportunities for treatment. I've been with BioNews, with MS News Today for a little over 5 years, writing the MS Wire column. I also am one of the social moderators now. I'm a moderator on the forums section of the website. I'm a retired journalist. I've been retired about 9 years now. But during my career, both for work and for fun, I have been able to do a lot of traveling. I've traveled all over the world. I've traveled to, I think, 46 of the states. There are a couple in the middle of the country that I still have to get to. But I'm here to tell you there is life after an MS diagnosis.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm so excited to dive into both of your stories a little bit more and to hear all about your creative pursuits, your travels, your interests. But first, Ed, you started talking a little bit about your diagnosis story. So you said you were diagnosed in 1980. What was that process like at that time, and how long did it take you to get an MS diagnosis from start to finish?
It was the summer of 1980. I was diagnosed in August, right after I returned from helping to cover the Republican convention in Detroit that summer. I had symptoms of fatigue, and I woke up one morning and discovered that I couldn't squeeze the toothpaste with my left hand. Also couldn't hold a blow dryer very well with my right hand. I had much longer hair back in 1980, but it was the 80s. I was fortunate, I still am fortunate, in that my wife at the time was the chief physical therapist at one of the hospitals in Washington, D.C. So I was right in with the neurology department there. And it took probably a year and two different neurologists to make a diagnosis. During the diagnostic process, one of the reflex tests, one of the physicians did a hammer knock on my left knee, and my knee went up so quickly and so far that it kicked her right in the stomach. So I was a patient to be known of then. During the process, I had nerve conduction tests, which were not particularly fun. I had some eye exams, but one of the most significant, I had a lumbar puncture, which really put the pin on the diagnosis. But one of the significant tests back then was a hot tub soak. They put you in a hot tub, one of those big metal hot tubs that they have in physical therapy departments, and soak you in hot water for 15 or 20 minutes and see what happened, and see what would happen to your legs when you got out. And my legs obviously were like rubber. And that, between that and the lumbar and the nerve conduction tests and the physical exams, of course, sealed the diagnosis. There were no treatments, as I said, but in the late 90s, I guess it was 95 or 96, I was fortunate enough to be one of the participants in the phase 3 clinical trial of Avonex. Unfortunately, I was on the placebo. Fortunately, the results of the trial were so good that they brought Avonex to the market earlier than expected. They shortened the clinical trial. And so I was jabbing myself in the leg for a number of years. And that's another story. I don't ever want to have to jab myself in the leg again. And I'm very fortunate that other treatments came along and I could move from Avonex to something else.
Absolutely. Thank you. And Arelis, I understand that you've been diagnosed more recently. So what was that process like for you? And perhaps how does that compare with what Ed has just shared?
Definitely different than Ed's. I mean, I couldn't even imagine, you know, how it was back then. And we are lucky, you know, not lucky to have it now, but, you know, with all the resources that we have and, you know, basically we do have MRIs and everything to even help with that. Like, I couldn't even imagine that. And so I was actually diagnosed in 2018. I was, you know, in the middle of trying to graduate from college, dealing my senior year. And, you know, just like a lot of many stories out there, I had a lot of weird symptoms that started with me. And it had started for some time now that I look back, but they were always like kind of shrugged to the side. You know, I had a lot of numbness in my leg. I had the itchiness that was going on. I kind of excused a lot of different things. So during my senior year at college, which is a very, very stressful year, I believe the stress is what caused my MS to kind of like come out. It's like, okay, you need to deal with this. I felt like I was always tested for, okay, you're either going to think about your health or you're going to think about your career and what needs to happen. and I always shifted towards my career and getting things done. I was just so focused on that path. So I kind of put my health to the side, and after graduation, I, you know, was able to get my job in New York City. I was able to work downtown New York. So I was living that commuter life, and it was very, that's when it really started. It was very hectic. The numbness started when I was doing this commute into the city, and I had no idea what was going on. I've been having this problem, and people are like, you know, what's going on with your leg? And I would just kind of excuse it. I was in a car accident when I was in college, and in another college. I went away in Massachusetts, and I would just kind of blame it on that. I'm like, you know what? It's probably from that. You know, I'm just going to dismiss this. And I kind of continued on, and there was just something telling me that I needed to kind of take a look, you know, further into this. So I decided to get an MRI done on my lumbar spine, because I thought it had some relation with my car accident I was in. And I went to this doctor, and, you know, he dealt with you know, basically surgeries on your backs and just checking out herniated discs and things like that. So he just kind of sent me in, you know, just get an MRI on your lumbar spine and let's see what's going on. So when I had the appointment with him to discuss the results, I mean, I didn't know back then, because I didn't really know like the MS lingo or, you know, anything of that sort. But it basically flat out said it on that MRI, but he kind of excused it. And he just kind of pointed out, you know, you have a herniated disc. This is what you need to do. I'm going to send you to physical therapy. I'm going to send you to get a cortisone shot or a surgery. That's basically your options. And I was like, okay, I just, you know, and I remember it so clearly. I'm like, I just want to make sure that this is what it is, because it's, I'm feeling it's different. It's like numbness going on. And he was like, yeah, you know, just kind of excusing it. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to send you to this guy. You can start physical therapy. And I was like, okay. I kind of reviewed my MRI results really quickly, and there was just so many things that were like pointing out at me. There was like abnormalities, demyelination, you know, let's look further into this to make sure it's not, you know, like myelinization, you know, like these big words. I had no idea. And I remember pointing this out to him, and he flat out said, oh, don't even worry about that. That's nothing, you know, just start physical therapy. And of course I listened, even though my gut was telling me there's something else in this MRI result. And, you know, I completed my physical therapy, and I obviously went back to him, and I was like, you know, something else is going on there. You know, it didn't help. So he then, you know, continued to talk to me about surgery once again on my back and send me off to this other doctor. And, you know, I was just blessed because somebody else came into my life. It was like this neurologist that my aunt knew. And she was like, you need to make an appointment with her. My appointment ended up being the day right before I was supposed to get this shot done with my, for my lumbar spine, or to talk about that. So once I, you know, had this appointment with her, she gave me all the little mini tests. She's like, you know, I need you to walk for me. I need you to do this and repeat these words and repeat them backwards to me. And I had no idea what was going on. And I think on the look of her face, she already knew. And she was like, okay, Aurelis, this is what I'm going to do. I need you to get these MRIs done for me. And I was like, oh, really? She's like, yeah, you know, your brain, your thoracic spine and lumbar. I'm like, your brain? I was like, okay, now you need to explain, because this is something I've never even heard of. And she's like, okay, I don't want you to, you know, get scared or anything. But I'm looking into MS, multiple sclerosis. I just want to make sure. She's like, please do not go home and Google this. I want to make sure I get the results and have a conversation. So of course I go home and Google it. I mean, so I'm Googling, you know, what MS was, and just reading it, I like diagnosed myself. I'm like, wow, this is too spot on. This is what it is. And, you know, obviously getting the results back, she called me in and she basically diagnosed me with it, which I was in total shock and in denial for some time. And yes, I knew that some changes were going to happen in regards to that. And that's how I was diagnosed.
Can I jump in for a second, Allie, on that?
Yeah,
because Arellis made two very good points. Number one, when it comes to your health, follow your gut. If something that a physician is telling you doesn't sound right, follow your gut. And the other one was that your neurologist said, we're going to have a conversation. Because although we're on the internet now, it's important to have the conversation with the neurologist, because there's so much disinformation and there are so many people who mean well, who try to solve your problems on the internet and who will start writing a post with the words, I think I heard that, or somebody told me that, or I think I read that. And those are warning signs that maybe this information isn't totally accurate. So two good things that that you mentioned.
Absolutely. And I wanted to pick up on that that idea of following your gut, Arellis, because it sounds like you probably had to figure out how to advocate for yourself. And it's great that someone jumped in to help you. But looking back, or if someone's watching right now, and Ed, you can answer this question as well, and they don't feel like they're getting the right answer or the full story, and but they don't know how to have that conversation or how to look for a neurologist, what would you recommend or what do you wish you had known that might have helped you in that situation?
For me?
Yeah, go ahead, Arellis.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's, well, going back to the, you know, following your gut, I think during the time of diagnosis, our mind is kind of going everywhere. So we may be quick to go to the first person to tell us, hey, this is it. This is what you need to do. And we're just automatically finding the quick kind of fix. And we're like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm always telling people now because of my experience, I'm like, please get a second opinion. Please do this. Whether you feel it or not, it's always great to do that. But it was nerve-wracking. You know, you don't want to tell someone, hey, you're wrong. And, you know, I'm always thinking about other people's feelings. So I'm like, he's went to school for this. He's done 10 years and, you know, medical stuff. And he has all the plaques all over the walls. And who am I to tell him he's wrong? But I knew because now I have to look at myself. Imagine I had gone through surgery. You know, surgery is not just putting a Band-Aid over a little cut. It's, you know, back surgery, which is very serious. And I had to just kind of take that action. And, you know, even into the future, I even, you know, ended up doing a Google review, and it was sort of because I needed to help other people as well because of how everything kind of went. And it was kind of one of those incidents where it was kind of like throwing, okay, this is what it's going to be, okay, and very quick and dismissive. And I felt that if you did that to me, and these MRI results were so, I mean, I go back now and I look at that exact MRI. And now that I know all the vocabulary, everything to know about MS, I mean, I'm practically a neurologist now. I couldn't even believe it. And, you know, going on to my next neurologist, she read it and she flat out told me, she was like, I can't believe that this is your MRI and this is what came about. And he didn't do anything about that. Luckily, she told me, you know, the time that was wasted or anything did not affect your MS and didn't make it progress, which I'm very thankful for. But I definitely tell people, please, you know, speak up. You know your body best. I think a lot of people in this MS journey, they look at, you know, certain points throughout it and their body is basically telling them like, okay, don't do this, don't eat that, or, you know, take rest today. And it's true. You know, you always have to follow that. And it was, you know, a decision that I had to make. And I'm happy that I did it. And I was happy I was able to go back and write this review, which I actually contemplating on doing for a very long time, but I felt that it was right. Also went with my gut. And, you know, I did go back to see, you know, what was going on. Many people had liked it. And then there was reviews after that, that actually was very similar to mine about the whole surgery process. So to me, I was like, okay, this is great that people can see it. People can actually advocate for themselves and kind of speak up and not feel that intimidation when it comes to the whole medical field and, you know, maybe others that may know more about, you know, what they've been studying. And yeah.
Yeah. I love that point about, you know, your body best. And I think it's great that you use that opportunity to be an example and share your experience. So hopefully it helps others have the same experience. Ed, do you have any stories about having to advocate for yourself or getting a second opinion?
Only from what I've received from other people, because I've been fortunate. But I've read in writing the column, and this is probably a good time to plug the book that I wrote, We're Not Drunk, We Have MS, which is a guide for MS newbies, basically. And I wrote that because it's necessary to be your own advocate. It's necessary to go into your doctor's visits with some knowledge of the disease. The problem is that I see expressed over and over again by other people with MS is, number one, many, if not most, general neurologists don't understand MS. And if they do understand it, they understand MS of 20 years ago or 15 years ago or even 10 years ago, and it's not the MS of today. So they're outdated in the therapies they prescribe. They're outdated in the way they want to treat you. They don't want to have the conversation that you need to have. It needs to be a collaboration between patient and doctor. So you're looking for an MS specialist, someone who may be working at an MS center, and there are many of them throughout the country. And then when you're speaking with them, you want to go in with a list of questions to talk about, because you're not going to remember all of the symptoms. You're not going to remember all of the things that bother you. So you go in and then have that conversation with them and decide between the two of you what your treatment course should be. I was, I wanted to jump through the phone screen Tuesday evening when we were doing this with two other of our social media communicators. And I think it was, I'm not sure if it was Rochelle or
Desiree.
I knew Llama, but I couldn't think Desiree. I'm sorry. I think maybe it was Desiree, who said that her neurologist, after diagnosing her, gave her a little bit of information about MS and then said, okay, go onto the internet and research it. And that's not the way to treat a patient. And that's why I do what I do. And that's why I'm glad to be here, because I think there's a great conversation that people need to have in order to become empowered to go in and get the treatment that that they need to conquer this disease.
Absolutely. And that's something we talked about on Tuesday, was the incredible value of having people living with MS with lived experience, filling this role as social media coordinators, jumping into the comments, helping to point people in the right direction, having conversations like this, using your experience to help others. So thank you so much for doing that. Ed, how long have you been writing about MS? I know you're a journalist, but how long have you been writing about your journey with this illness?
I've been with BioNews, MS News Today, for a little over 5 years, going back to July, 5.5 years ago. And that was an extension of my MS Wire blog, which I still write in coordination with the columns that I write twice a week for the MS News Today website. And I started writing not only because I saw the need within MS, but because it I enjoyed it. When I retired at the end of 2012, I guess, I just wanted to chill for a couple of years. And I did. We had a place at the beach, and I just became a beach bum. But my keyboard fingers got itchy and wanted to get back to writing again. They say write what you know. And with 40 plus years of living with MS, I pretty much know MS. And it's been an education for myself in churning out two columns a week because it forces me to keep up to date on everything that's going on and trying to decipher some of the medical literature that's out there, that when they're talking about B cell depletion and gut microbia and the 20 plus disease modifying therapies that are out there now, it can be overwhelming. And the education has helped me treat myself in connection and conjunction and collaboration with my wonderful neurologist in the DC area, who I used to travel 3 hours each way for appointments to see when I moved out of suburban DC. And I've been very fortunate to have had her treating me for over 20 years now. And that's why I'm doing so well, I think.
That's amazing. And thank you for all that work that you do, writing those columns and deciphering all of that challenging medical language.
Hey, I saw the boss logged on. Can I get a raise?
Yes, I think Chris is here. He's watching. Hello, Chris. Arelis, you also use your background in fashion to express yourself and to talk about your journey with MS. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So during lockdown, I decided to do a DIY project. And I got really, and I've always loved denim jackets, anything denim. It's just always been, you know, a thing of mine. And I decided to do a project and do like painting. I would do like YouTube videos just to try something new. And something on my list to do on my, you know, during my lockdown days outside and take a little break. And from there, I just like really enjoyed it. You know, the whole painting, the whole concept. And the first denim jacket that I did was for myself. And it had to do with my, you know, me with my MS. It was kind of like get up and laugh it off was the message. And I had like a heart on my left shoulder. My MS affects my left side. So I thought it was just a thing, you know, a cute thing just to put a little bit more extra love on my left side. And, you know, this whole like idea for myself, not that I'm like, you know, always like laughing at myself throughout this whole journey, but I do try and get a laugh out of it. You know, I use a lot of humor and that's just the way I am. So I thought it was perfect for me. And then looking into it, I was like, okay, I kind of want to continue doing this. I would go to my local thrift shop and I would just upcycle these denim jackets, paint them, write these messages on them that have to do with MS, like with my journey with MS, and something that others can relate to as well with whatever they're dealing with. They don't need to have MS or any illness at all. And I just kind of went on with the idea and I would do these, you know, messages, and I made a little signature thing that on each jacket, the left arm is always going to have the positive affirmations or messages on them to kind of go with the idea of, you know, me dealing it with it and MS affecting my left side. And I created this Etsy shop where I basically sell them. I, you know, post them there. And from there, I kind of linked my whole Pinterest business page and kind of do content for it. I do photos. I do like mini photo shoots for myself wearing them. And I thought it was great because it kind of kept me, you know, doing something. I started Googling like SEO, trying to learn about that, trying to learn about analytics, learning more about it, algorithms for these different platforms. So just being on top of Pinterest, being on top of Etsy, and then you know, I do my whole Instagram as well. So I thought it was perfect, you know, just kind of creating this whole idea, you know, fun jackets people can buy, can wear if they're into them, and just having fun with it and being able to tie fashion. And, you know, I'm always, you know, dealing with MS and things like that. I thought it was a great opportunity.
Yeah, I've seen the jackets. They're beautiful. They're very creative. And I'm just wondering, has there been a big uptake from other people in the MS community? Or do you find that this product is reaching people across different demographics, across different communities?
I think it's, you know, I haven't seen anyone, you know, specifically from the MS community. I know it's just from just everywhere, all around. I was able to connect Google Analytics. And once I changed my Etsy shop, like international, I can see that it's also hitting, you know, some places internationally as well, which is awesome. I think it's great. I think I get most excitement is out of my Pinterest account. Just seeing the analytics there, it's worldwide. It's reaching a lot of people because I see that there's definitely a market on there for people who love like fun, crazy jackets. And we all know with Pinterest, you can create your own boards. So having my jackets saved onto all these crazy boards and, you know, people really loving the ideas. And yeah, it's, I guess it's like reached everywhere. And just for someone to save my jacket underneath their board, I'm like, wow, like this is awesome. You're in Russia and you saved my jacket in one of your, you know, your boards. Like, how did it even get to you? Which I think is awesome. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it highlights the fact that together, we're all together right now by the power of social media, the internet.
Right.
And you're very active in the forums, and MS News Today is like an online community for people with MS. So it made me think about community now versus then. And I wanted to ask you, Ed, today you're in this role as a social media coordinator, you're a forum moderator, you're a participant in this online community. What was community like back in 1980 and throughout the 80s and 90s when you were first diagnosed with MS?
I had no community. I was not a joiner of groups. I was an only child. I am an only child. I wasn't a group person. I'm still not a group person. I'm not a person who generally goes to an MS association meeting, for example. So my community has always been online as far as MS is concerned. It's given me the opportunity to learn from others, as I mentioned, just as I try and educate folks. But I will tell you, although they were into the internet today, my fun hobby is a communications hobby, and it's my non-MS group, and that's ham radio. I've been a ham radio operator since I was 13 years old, so that's 60 years now. And 95% of the conversations that I have are using relatively high-speed Morse code, which I decipher in my head, not by letter or by word, but by word group. So it's like speaking a language, although I was horrible in high school at language. It took me 4 years to get through 2 years of high school French. But Morse code, I speak. And Morse code not only has provided a community of people around the world for me, but it's also given me brain activity, brain stimulation, and it's given me brain-finger coordination, because you have to use your fingers to send the Morse code. So it's been therapy. So there are two communications answers for you.
That is really cool. And Ed, I think you're the first person I've met that is a ham radio enthusiast. So just for the benefit of anyone watching who may not know, is the primary difference between ham radio and like AM, FM radio the communication through Morse code? Is that the primary way it's different?
No. The difference is that AM, FM radio, as you're thinking of, is commercial broadcasting or public broadcasting, but it's one way. It's someone broadcasting to a group. Now, I worked in commercial radio. I worked in several radio stations in Washington, D.C. over the years. Ham radio is a two-way communication. Most of it is done by voice. Well, you can say, why can't you just pick up a telephone today and talk to somebody? But the idea of communicating with someone via radio waves with the power of a light bulb, 100 watts output of your radio, into a wire antenna and talking to someone halfway around the world who may be a monk on an island in Greece, Mount Athos. There was one monk who was a ham radio operator who talked to the world. I've met an awful lot of interesting people that way. So it's two-way communication, voice, Morse code, television, bouncing signals off the moon, some hams do. There's a ham station on the International Space Station and licensed by the Federal Communications Commission in the United States or by a governmental agency in whatever country the ham is in, having passed an exam in operating techniques, technology, and in some cases, Morse code.
Wow, that is fascinating. And I think we need to have another IG Live. But
any hams out there, my call is KR3E, Kilo Romeo 3 Echo.
I love that. I love that. I hope that someone hams you. Is that a verb?
Yeah, contact me.
Awesome. And Rochelle commented, when the zombies come, I'll need you on my team. So we'll all take note, Ed. That's awesome. Arelis, how has community looked for you? I know you were diagnosed in 2018, a couple years before the world shut down. But where have you found community?
So, I mean, thankfully, you know, the beginning process of my diagnosis, I was very grateful for my family's help, and my friends are amazing, still are. But it was great to connect with people in the MS community. I thought, you know, it's great to see what they experience, what they do. So luckily for me, you know, not like Ed, I was able to go onto, you know, all these different platforms and these resources, and I would actually communicate there with them. You know, I would set up a little profile, I would ask questions, I would actually help and reach out. So I've been kind of doing that for some time, and I enjoyed it so much because I notice, looking back, there's like so many different levels. Somebody can have a great post, a great day. It can be, I want to give advice to do this. And some comments can get very dark and deep, and these people have no one they talk to. So they go on these platforms, and that's where they let it all out. And it really hit me. I'm like, wow, I really want to help more people. These people don't have one friend. They'll even say it, you know, I don't have family. I don't have friends. I don't have anyone that I can go to, but just hear. And you know, some may even say like, hear me out, or someone respond to me. And, you know, seeing that and reading that, I just couldn't even imagine what these individuals would be going through. And, you know, luckily I was able to communicate with them, form the community. So I'm grateful for that. We all learn from one another. So that's the, you know, the best part of, you know, having the MS community, whether it be on Instagram, whether it be, you know, whichever platform that's, you know, out there for that.
Absolutely. And I suspect that the pandemic made that experience even more isolating for so many people, because any physical contact, social contact that people had would have been even more limited. So it's great that you're both in this role. You've been in it for a little while now. So I wanted to ask you, how's it going? And what do you tend to do on a daily basis? And what have you enjoyed most about being social media coordinators for MS News Today? And Ed, maybe I'll start with you.
Oh, this one, I'm not prepared to answer that quickly. I love being able to answer a question for someone that I know the answer to and I see is flailing around for an answer or need some guidance in where to find the answer. I enjoy and I try to be supportive of folks who are looking for just an ear. But I also feel a sense of responsibility to, if someone is misinformed about something and is putting that out for others to see without any challenge, to tactfully challenge and provide the correct information with the source of that information. Because as I think I've said before, there's the dangerous Dr. Internet. And Dr. Internet isn't always right.
Yeah, I don't think Dr. Internet went to medical school.
Well, neither did I.
No, but you know what you don't know, and I think that's an important point to make as someone who's acting as a resource to other people with MS. You know your limitations, you know where you can be helpful, but you also can identify where you maybe need to point them in the direction of a professional. So thank you for doing that. Arelis, what about you? What do you do on a daily basis, and what have you enjoyed the most?
You know, being an MS collaborator, I think it's been great. I love reading what people are posting, you know, their questions, definitely being able to help out in any way. And, you know, I kind of do like a mix. I try to keep up with the articles as well. That way I know, okay, I read something about this. Let me just look it up really quick and send it over to them and make sure it kind of like makes sense, you know, for what they're asking. And like Ed has mentioned, it helps me as well, you know, reading everything. And sometimes they point out things that I haven't even heard about. And I'm like, okay, I actually mark it. And I'm like, I'm going to check that out on the side for myself because I'm really interested in this. And, you know, it just kind of goes back to how we all can just kind of work. We're helping them, but as well, they can be helping us, you know, kind of point out different information. And even with the team, you know, hearing what they say, I'm like, oh, that's a good point. Or, you know, we can all just learn from one another. And it's great seeing all of us and how different we are. I think we've mentioned this before. We spoke about this in one of our meetings. And I love how Ed is always very like, he has like all the scientific like terms and things going. I'm like, wow, that is amazing. Because I just wouldn't be able to answer in that way. And, you know, I wouldn't even try to, because I feel like I would be just sending out the wrong message. So I think it's been nice to see, you know, everyone just coming together and just, you know, we can help each other out. If we have a question, we're just like, you know, on the message, on Slack, you know, and just kind of work together with that.
And you and the others answer in a very human way.
Not a bot.
That's as important as the scientific way or the stiffer way that I sometimes can answer.
This was something that Rochelle identified and Desiree as well, just that it's great to have four very different people with different perspectives, different experiences, and different ways of responding. I think Rochelle also said, you know, she can sometimes be a little bit more scientific, whereas she complimented Desiree on being very warm and in touch with her emotions. And we need all of that. All of that is welcome and needed in this forum. So thank you both for bringing that to the table.
Of course.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to talk to you both about, because you do represent two different age demographics, and Ed, I got this question from your blog, the MSWire.com, was this idea of ageism. So for people watching who don't know what that is, it's being discriminated against because of your age. And I was just wondering if either of you had experienced that as part of your healthcare experience with MS, and maybe tell us a little bit about that. Ed, do you want to start?
Sure. As the senior in the group here, no, I have not as an MS patient. Fortunately, I started Lemtrada, which is, for those who aren't familiar with it, is a super high test intravenous treatment for MS. And I started that, I guess, at about age 68. Now, this is in a setting in the neurology community where doctors are saying, okay, after age 60 or after age 65, your progression slows down naturally. You don't need to be treated. In the discussion I had with my neuro, I wanted to change medications. I wasn't ready to go off medication. I thought that there was still the opportunity to slow or stop the progression of my disease. And I think it's actually worked as I come up on, I guess, 4.5 years now post second round of Lemtrada. But she didn't poo-poo it because of age. A lot of neurologists would have. I recently read of a patient who wanted to be treated with a highly effective medication, and the neurologist said, no, you're too old for that. Well, you're not too old for that if you can, if your insurance or if your national healthcare system will cover the drug. There is a lot of age discrimination in terms of clinical trials and cutoff ages of 50 or 55, when there are a lot of people with MS who could benefit from treatment who are 50 and older, yet they can't get the treatment approved because there haven't been enough clinical trials showing that it's effective for someone in an older age group. So that's my rant about ageism.
I think that's an important point. Yeah. It sounds like a vicious cycle. There isn't enough clinical trials, there aren't enough clinical trials, and then there isn't enough evidence that it could work for these people, and so on and so forth.
Catch 22 for those old enough to recognize that expression.
Yes.
But if you don't, look it up.
Arelis,
I'm gonna mark that.
What about you? Have you experienced ageism or discrimination because you're young as part of your healthcare experience?
I feel like I have not dealt with, you know, any ageism. I feel like it's more towards, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm, you know, going to another different path here, more about like invisible illness. You know, if you don't look a certain way, you know, you're treated a little bit differently. And then maybe the ageism will go, you know, in connection with that. Kind of like the comments, well, why do you need a seat if, you know, you're too young? You know, like that kind of saying, I've definitely dealt with that. It's kind of like, you know, you're too young. You don't need to like have a seat, or, you know, I'm like kind of like the older one. So I, you know, I'm the one that needs like the care and, you know, this seat, when in reality with an invisible illness, it's affecting everyone, you know, differently, the same. I think I've dealt with that more, kind of like the looks wise, you know, if nothing is showing physically where I can't see you, you know, with the, you know, what they think a disabled person would look like, then I think the discrimination comes there.
I think that's a really great point.
Yeah, it's, I think that's one that a lot of people deal with, especially, you know, in the MS community. I've seen it, and it's unfortunate that it has to be that way. I mean, I look back into the time that I was working in New York City, and, you know, throughout the whole process of me getting diagnosed and me dealing with my leg, and there were so many times that I just wanted someone to offer me like a seat on the subway, or, you know, I'm like there limping, or, you know, whatever it may have been that day. And, you know, of course, so like, oh, you're young and you're just getting out of work. She's probably going to happy hour. You know, it's just the kind of like, you know, it's the stigma, you know, and I know a lot of people are trying to change that, because I think that's what relates to the whole ageism. And I know even with, you know, my appointments, I, you know, I have many lesions, my MRI results, I've gotten told probably a couple of times that they didn't expect me to walk through the door. And I've, and, you know, once they explained, you know, why, and I was like, okay, can I hear about my results? Because now I'm a little bit scared. Or they'll straight up tell me, you look better than your results. And I'm like, okay, this is scary. Now I need information. So I think that's more of what I would deal with than maybe the ageism.
I appreciate you bringing that up because it's true. Yeah. People have in their mind an idea of what a disabled person looks like, and they probably think wheelchair, walker, bedridden.
Right.
Like a lot of people have assumptions. And it reminds me of the title of your book, We're Not Drunk, We Have MS. And I think you chose that title for a reason. And I think it ties in nicely with the point that Arellis is making.
Yeah. Everybody, I think, who has MS has been looked at when they pull into a handicapped parking spot and they are not noticeably limping, but it's a hot day and you know if they have to park halfway into the parking lot by the time they get to the front door of the Kmart or wherever they're going, they're going to really be dragging. And I don't know what the answer is for that. There are some people who say, confront the person and say, just be glad you don't have multiple sclerosis. I'm more that type of person. There are some people who say, ignore it. There are some people who say we should be wearing buttons saying I have an invisible illness. I'd rather just tell the person to, go take a hike.
I used to actually say that, in my commute, I'm like, I should just put a sign. Please offer me a seat.
Yeah, but
long day at work.
You were probably commuting on the New York City subway, and they don't offer seats to anybody on the subway.
No, they don't. It was I used to wait for the next, less packed subway, which never really happens
no such
in New
thing
York City.
In New York, no.
Right. But I was like, just if I can see a little bit of a seat, like I need to sit down because I throughout my long days, I was like, I had enough. I can't even, do this right now. I'm going to have to sit on your lap. Either way, I'm like, I need a rest. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is when it comes to, invisible illnesses like this, because it's no one really knows. And that's why they always say, you don't really know what somebody's going through or what they're dealing with. So you got to be kind and just what we have to deal with and hopefully spread awareness so that can change.
Absolutely. And Rochelle commented again, if you were watching on Tuesday, Rochelle talked about a shirt she thought about making, and I think she should make it, that says crippled and cute AF. I think that's right, Rochelle. You can let me know if I didn't get that quite right, but sounds like maybe that would be a good option for some folks who want to be a little bit more explicit.
We can do a collab on that.
I was thinking the same thing. Well, Ed, Arellis, it's been a huge pleasure to speak with both of you tonight. And I just wanted to allow some time for you guys to promote your work, promote your websites, your blog, your Etsy store. So please tell the folks where they can buy your book, Ed, where they can buy jackets from you, Arellis. So Ed, maybe you can go first.
Okay. The book's already been plugged a couple of times. We're Not Drunk, We Have MS. It is available on Amazon as both a paperback and an ebook. It's available on the Apple bookstore as an ebook and several other electronic bookstores. There's the mswire.com blog, which pretty much mirrors these days my column for Multiple Sclerosis News Today, which is where what I write appears first. You can find me on here on Instagram. You can find me on where else? Facebook. I've done enough plugging. Go ahead to the Seventh Avenue clothing maven.
No. So I usually promote my jackets on my Instagram. I have my Etsy link at the top in my bio. It's my name for my store is Jeji's Denim Closet. I know it's a little bit hard to kind of remember. So it's definitely at the link in my, my Instagram page where you can find that. And also I have links to my Pinterest as well if you want to look at more content and kind of more fun pictures on there.
Awesome. Thank you. And if folks want to stay connected, it's just as simple as staying connected with MS News Today, msnewstoday.com, the forums, the social media pages. And I know you're both very active in all of those places. So again, thank you so much for your work and for sharing your experience and guidance with others. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And thanks everyone for joining.
Yes. It was a pleasure. Thanks for joining, everybody. And I hope you'll visit us on all the platforms. We look forward to chatting two-way with you instead of just one-way.
Yes. Absolutely. Fantastic. Well, have a wonderful evening. And thank you again for your time tonight. It was great to talk to you.
You as well. Bye. Good night. Have a good night.
Bye. Good night, everyone.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our Multiple Sclerosis News Today forums, a trusted MS community ready to welcome you anytime.